Welcome to the Defence Forces podcast, brought to you by the Defence Forces Public Relations Branch.
Hello and welcome to the Irish Defence Forces podcast. My name is Captain Cian Clancy, and today we're speaking to leading seaman Ryan Carroll, a diver with the Naval Service Diving Section, about becoming a naval diver and military diving in the Defence Forces. So thanks very much for coming on, Ryan.
Thanks very much for having me.
So what we're going to do in the podcast, and I always kind of go through the broad plan that we're going to have, we're going to talk about your own background, like what drew you to join the Naval Service in the first place and what drew you to diving. And then we're going to go into a bit about the roles of the Naval Service Diving Section and what military diving actually means, what it is. And then for people at home, we're going to go through the diving course and the various phases and what you need to do and your aptitude tests and what it takes to become a military diver. Then we might just get a little bit about your own career and maybe some notable operations you've been involved in. So how long have you been in the Naval Service?
This is actually my 8th year now in the Naval Service itself, and I've actually been a diver for 7 of those years, so I was lucky enough.
Well, you went in very quickly.
Absolutely, straight out of recruits, yeah.
And so, like, had you any maritime background in the family, or are you local? I am local.
I'm actually only about 15 minutes from Hal Bolan itself, but absolutely no military background, no maritime background whatsoever. Just seen a couple of ads, and it was interesting to me, and said, it's definitely something that I'd be interested in.
Something you were interested in doing, like you probably saw the ships going up and down the harbour and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, you would, yeah, absolutely. Or even on the news, you'd see a couple of things, diving especially and stuff, and it's definitely something that'd interest any lad, I would presume, you know.
Yeah, and so, like, you were saying that, you were telling a little anecdote beforehand that you were getting a tour of the naval bases where you saw the diving equipment for the first time before you had ever joined.
Absolutely. I got a tour around the base, and basically I seen the diving unit below, and I just thought, to be honest with you, you come in and you pick, oh, I want to be a diver, and away you go. But I was led to believe it was a lot harder than that, you know.
Yeah. So it must have been kind of tough for you to come down, like, having just done recruit training and then, like, apply for a diving course, which has a reputation for being a very tough course in the Defence Forces.
Absolutely. I was a young 18-year-old at the time, just done recruit training, and as you know, recruit training can be tough enough as it is, and I found myself every day looking out the window at Standeasy watching the divers fin swim past, and it was just something that I needed to get and wanted.
Just a fierce drive to do, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's fantastic. Just for people at home, obviously, the Naval Service Diving Section is probably one of the most well-known aspects of the Naval Service, besides the actual ships themselves. What are the roles of the Naval Service Diving Section? What is military diving?
So basically, we're an operational diving unit. So basically, we're on call 24/7. You have different diving operations from hull maintenance, fixing ends of ships, to body recovery, and also then you can go from body recovery to mine clearance to underwater demolition. It absolutely changes the whole time. Sometimes then you might need a surface swimmer, so you might find yourself jumping out of a helicopter.
Yeah,
it's unreal the changes that you can have from day to day down the diving unit.
And I mean it's a really kind of technical role. There's a huge amount of equipment and different aspects to look at. Earlier today we just had a kind of a tour around the diving section below, and the huge breadth of very advanced equipment down there, from remote operated vehicles and all sorts of things.
Absolutely. You'll find yourself, even after doing a stint at sea, come back in, it's nearly you're just trying to get to know all, there's new equipment there the whole time, so you're just trying to get, for the first couple of weeks, you're trying to get the grips of your new equipment, and it's great because there's always courses ongoing that you can advance your skills of being a diver, in terms of, like as you said, our remote operated vehicles, to our side scan sonars, to just even your basic comms and GoPros and stuff, you know.
Yeah, and I suppose when we talk about the course, we're going to talk a lot about the actual diver's personal equipment as well, and I know we were down there and some of the weight of it is unbelievable, but there's also a lot of equipment that you operate that is not actually on a diver. It's as you said, like remote operated vehicles or side scan sonar and these kind of things, which people wouldn't really realize.
Well, absolutely. There's a lot of there's a big technical side of diving itself before even getting in the water. A lot of times you'd use your side scan sonars to pick up different images underwater, and it does make the diving slightly easier in terms of if you're picking up contacts, for example, a car in the water, you'd use your side scan sonars or your remote operated vehicles to pick up the contact. And like, even what you do is as you pick it up, it minimizes the amount of diving you'll have to do and safety of divers. So a lot of time you actually know what you're getting into before you get into the water nowadays, you know.
Yeah, you really know where you're going, like, if
absolutely. A lot of our diving is zero visibility, so
Yeah,
it's good to have a kind of picture in your head of what you're going into.
Roughly where you're going. And so, like, with regard to the course itself, so we spoke about, before you even actually go down on the course, there's an aptitude test that you have to do. By the way, before, because a lot of people actually ask, before we answer that question, there's a lot of people actually ask on, say, social media, like, do you need, once you join, do you need any qualifications before going down for the diving course?
Absolutely not. No, you need nothing whatsoever. It's just to pass this aptitude test. To be honest, before I done my aptitude test, I went off and I done just a paddy diving course, just to make sure that I was actually comfortable underwater and I actually liked it under the water, you know, before I started. But in terms of the aptitude test, you just apply, just like you apply for any military course. You go down then, and it's a two-day aptitude. So at day one, it's an introduction to everything. So we'll show you how to clear the mask. They'll show you exactly what the whole course is going to entail. Day two then is more of a, they put the push on a small bit more. What you'll do is in the morning, you'll do some water circuits, long endurance fin swims, and then what you'll do is you do a dive. So your dive then will entail just, they put you down for 5 minutes, make sure you're comfortable underwater, bring you up, and what you do then is you do some mask clearance drills. So you'll go down, clear your mask, come up and show the supervisor that the mask is clear, and then what you'll do is you'll go down without the mask. Go down to the bottom, put on the mask, clear it, come back up and show them that you're at the bottom by grabbing a lump of mud.
Yeah.
Show the supervisor at the bottom. And that's actually your in-water aptitude. And then what you do in the afternoon, then you do your diver's fitness test.
Okay. And what's involved in the diver's fitness test?
So the diver's fitness test is actually a 3-mile run. So it's broken down into two parts. What you'll have is you'll have a mile and a half out, which you have 15 minutes to complete. So that's actually, it's actually your warm-up. So you take your warm-up, whatever time you get out there in, you can take your stretch, do whatever you like. But on the 15th minute, you're leaving to come back in. You then have 10 and a half minutes to complete the mile and a half. As soon as you make the mile and a half within the 10 minutes and 30 seconds, you get a 2-minute break. From the 2-minute break, you'll go on to 8 wide grip full extension pull-ups. From there, you get a 1-minute break, and then you'll do 16 full extension dips, a further 1-minute break, and then you do 40 sit-ups in 1 minute. Okay. And that's actually your fitness test.
Right, so you can see from that, like, it's a very kind of physically robust sort of a course that you're going into, because we would have spoken a bit in saying, we did a series recently on the cadetship and that kind of thing, and we've spoken about the induction fitness test, but this is obviously another level again. You need to have built up a level of military robustness, which is probably, it's just more robustness is what you need going down, really.
Absolutely. Being robust and mental strength is what you need as well, but we still do our normal fitness test every year, so we actually do 2 fitness tests per year is what we do.
Okay, so you've done your aptitude test, you've passed the aptitude test and passed the diver's fitness test, and you're about to come down on the course. So how long is the actual diving course itself?
The course itself is actually 15 weeks long.
Okay.
And it's broken down then into different phases.
And then, so with regard to the phases, so phase one, what's involved in phase one?
So the first phase is what you'll have is you'll have a 2-week fitness period. So your PTI in charge of the diving course will have the course for the 2 weeks. Basically what he'll do is he'll do gym work, he'll do different circuits, cardio sessions, so long endurance runs, and then what you'll do is you'll get into the water, you'll do same as what you've done in your aptitude test, you'll do different fin swims, long endurance swims, and different water circuits. At the end of that 2 weeks then, to be able to go on to the diving course, you need to complete the Naval Diver's Fitness Test once again. If you fail, you get 1 retry, if not, you're gone off the course. Successful candidates then will go on to the diving phase.
Okay, but so like if you're doing the naval fitness set, the diver's fitness test again, you've completed it before, like, so, and you've now had two further weeks of fitness training, so you should be in a kind of a good position to.
Absolutely, you'd like to think that you'd be in a good fitness phase, fitness state, but like to be honest, you're after 2 weeks of tough fitness. A lot of lads would be fatigued from it, but
yeah,
you try to look after them as best you can to try to get them over the line to pass it, because the dropout rate in the diving phase is a lot more than just the fitness phase.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay, yeah. Well, you mentioned long fin swims, so this is kind of a long distance sort of swim you'd be doing.
Oh, absolutely. You're just on your back with in your suit and a pair of fins on you, and your dive supervisors will give you a destination to get to, and you could be finning against tide or with tide, but you could be going for over an hour at sometimes, you know.
Yeah. Wow. So you've passed your fitness phase, and you're going into the dive phase. So, what's the very start of that? Because you mentioned when we were talking about the podcast, in the planning part of it, you mentioned that like you're very quickly into the gear.
Absolutely. So once you've done your aptitude test, you've shown that you're competent in the water and you can dive. So week one of your diving phase then is what's called lifeline signals. So it's very old school diving. What you'll have is you'll have a rope tied off to you. You'll have a second diver on the surface giving you signals. So you've different signals to go in different directions, basically. And for the full week, what you do is you're just practicing your signals, sending divers out on the line and back in. We actually still use it to this day. If comms go down, your diver on the surface will direct you onto different objects that are missing, such as cars.
So after your lifeline and signals week and your kind of very sort of basic introduction to the equipment and moving on the water, you move into phase three, which you very creatively called Hell Week. So
absolutely, it's Hell Week. It's called Jack's Day Week.
Yeah.
But as I said, it's definitely our Hell Week.
Colloquially known.
The way it works really is it's your endurance diving. It's absolutely mind-boggling as well. So all you have to do is you have a Jack's Day, which is a line lining the seabed out in our back channel there. And for 4 days straight, you're out and back on this line. No matter what the weather, you'll have ripping tides, everything. And basically, the goal is you have to get over 1,000 minutes within the 4 days.
Wow.
So it's absolutely...
So you talk about over the course of 4 days, that's like... What's that? That's how many hours in the water is that? 4 hours in the water?
Roughly more than 4 hours
in
the water.
4 hours a day in the water.
A lot of the time, you're like on average in the courses, we could get up to 1,200 or 1,300 minutes within the 4 days. Like, and
wow.
it's just, to be honest with you, you go into a world of your own. It's if you really think about what you're actually doing, you'd go mad. You'd actually go mad. So you're thinking about anything but what you're doing, to be honest with you.
And I suppose though, this is where you get really used to being underwater. This is where you it becomes second nature then in this, and that's why this phase is important.
Absolutely. It's to build up your endurance diving. So it's to get longer out of your sets per dive, so you can actually work underwater rather than sucking through your air. It's a different type of breathing. So
yeah.
Just building up your tolerance and being able to get longer out of your sets, so you can actually do work.
So you're kind of say you don't have many memories from that. You just remember just not to think.
Oh, absolutely. I was thinking about anything but, and obviously these courses are ran in January, so it's the coldest time of year.
Yeah.
So it's definitely you're thinking of anything but, to be honest.
So you're basically, you're there in your suit rattling, basically.
Absolutely shaking.
Fantastic. So that's a really tough week for people, but I suppose when you come out the other side of it, this is where you really, as I said, built up that endurance and you're kind of through a really tough week on the course. Then you move into phase four, which is 2 weeks. So what's involved in the next part?
Yeah, so basically it's a breakdown of two different weeks. So this is when you're really learning how to become a diver and actually work underwater rather than just breathing underwater.
Yeah.
So the way it works is you'll do a mixture of ship's bottom searches, so searching under the bottom of our naval ships here, and you'll actually get a knowledge of underneath the ships. A lot of lads haven't seen under ships before going into this week.
Yeah.
So it's learning different things of what can possibly go wrong, different areas of the ships. And also in this 2 weeks as well, what you do is you do compass attack swims. So it's swims. So it's basically you have a compass board in the water, you're given different objectives, and you actually have to locate your way to different areas around the water.
So orienteering underwater, as it was.
Absolutely, that's exactly what it is.
And is that? I presume that's very kind of technically difficult. Is it are you down on the bottom, and just kind of walking around with like a, not sound like stupid, but like a laminated map, or is it like?
No, what you'll have is you'll actually have a compass board,
a
full-on compass board. It's a plastic compass board with your built-in compass. And the way you'll work it is you wouldn't go below 6 meters below the water. So normally between 3 and 6 meters, and you'll have two divers. And the way it works then is obviously you have to be very still with your compass. So one guy will go up to the surface, barely peek over the top just to get his reference, come back down, and you're finning. So obviously in terms of orienteering, you're taking tides into consideration as well. So you could be given one direction, but the tide is obviously pulling you as well.
So
you need to check your bearings fairly regularly.
Okay, all right. Wow. And so when you say you're 3 to 6 meters on, you're basically kind of swimming on a bearing, basically.
Absolutely. You're swimming on a bearing. Yes. Yeah. So you're, it's basically, the special forces use it an awful lot in terms of, getting to a job or an operation. So they use it coming in off beaches and stuff just to hit certain areas. And that's where we do our training as well.
Okay. Well, and so if you're to move on then, so you've done your, so you can navigate underwater now, you can do certain amounts of work underwater with regard to the bottom of ships, you can breathe, do you know what I mean, properly as a diver, and you've done all that kind of madness before. The next phase then, phase five of the course down on Bear Island. Let's kind of go into that a bit.
Yeah, you'll go to Bear Island then. Obviously, before that as well, you do a couple of key wild searches and stuff before you go to Bear Island as well. But once you get to Bear Island, it's a real eye-opener, to be honest with you. The visibility improves a small bit, but the intensity picks up even more for these 2 weeks. So down in Bear Island, you'll have a mixture of everything is what you'll be doing. So you'll go back to doing a bit of fitness. You'll do early morning EMAs.
I just go back to an EMA is a...
An activity in the morning. So okay. Early morning activity is what it is. Basically, what you'll do is do your early morning activity and then your early deep diving in the morning. Straight away in the afternoon, then you might be doing different search patterns, search techniques. You're really, really learning how to be a diver down there. Once in Bear Island itself, you could be in bed and you could be called at 2 o'clock in the morning. We have this famous word called awkward. If an instructor mentions awkward at any time, that means you have to be ready to enter the water within 90 seconds.
Wow.
It's the time you're actually given to get into your diving equipment. But in Bear Island, I know you're familiar with it, the camp is at the top.
Yeah.
So what you have to do is the minute they give you awkward, you're dressed straight away like you're sleeping with nothing on. So you have to get on your diving equipment, run down, and actually get on your diving equipment below before they get down, and you need to be ready to enter the water before the dive supervisors get down, or yeah, and I know, there's a bit of trouble.
I know the distance, right? And is it actually down at the key wall, down
at the key wall? Yes.
So you're running down the hill.
So you run down the hill, pitch black at night. It could be 2 o'clock in the morning. They give you an awkward, and normally they're evil enough. They might only whisper at you.
Yeah.
And you're gone. You're straight away trying to enter the water.
And it's out. And as we mentioned discussing before, so it's the deep diving phase which you do. So I presume you go out into kind of the Bantry Bay area where it's actually deep.
Absolutely. So the first week, what you'll do is you'll do more your search patterns and just getting, so you build up your tolerance, getting deeper and deeper. But week two, then you'd normally have a ship supporting you. So you'll go out into Bantry Bay and you need a qualifying dive depth of 36 meters before you're actually a ship's diver.
Okay, well, and just talk to me a bit about, like, so when we talk about search patterns, this is just going through your drills and this would be closer in, just going through your drills of how you'd actually search an area, is that?
Absolutely. So it depends. You're searching for different objects. You might be searching for a bomb, or you might be searching for a missing person, or even a bigger object like a car or a helicopter, or you wouldn't know. So it literally depends on the type of job, the search that you'll do.
Yeah.
So you'll do a lot of our dives are zero visibility. So really, we use a lot of ropes and lines to snag in the areas rather than searching every little grain down below, you know.
Okay, and because it's interesting, like the qualifying depth of 36 meters, just try and go through this, right? Like paint a picture of what is it like being on the seafloor at 36 meters, like, as in, I presume it's kind of the weirdest thing in the world, or?
Absolutely. Look, it's dark, it's cold, it can be miserable, but to be honest, it can be fairly peaceful too, you know. It's a totally different world under there, and like even down to 10 meters is just as different, you know. It's actually slightly brighter at 10 meters, so it's actually great. But the deeper you go down, majority of the time the darker it gets, so you're bringing in torches, you're just trying to get any bit of visibility you can get, you know.
Yeah. And as regards, like, I mean, is that just on, like, what's in the canisters for that, or?
You just normal air for your initial phase. It's just normal air diving, so that's capable up to 36 meters is what that is.
Okay, so in the actual 15-week diving course itself, you're just operating with ordinary surface air canisters?
Well, at the start of it, it's just all air, yeah. And then you'll go on to your IS mix, your interspiro mixed gas, your semi-closed rebreather.
Later on, which we'll probably go through in a second. So, no, just trying to give people an idea of like, that sort of pure blackness down there, and, you know.
Oh, absolutely. It's darker and dark, let me tell you.
And also, you do... So you have the darkness below, but you also do night dives while you're on Bear Island.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So even on your normal diving course, before you get to Bear Island, every Tuesday and Thursday is your night dive. So you'll cover lectures in the morning. So in terms of the lectures, you'll do your dive physics, dive medicine, and then every Tuesday and Thursday evening, then you'll do your night dive. So okay. You have an insight to night dives before you go to Bear Island as well.
Yeah, yeah. Right, wow. So, after you finish your time on Bear Island, that qualifies you to 36 meters, and that's a huge milestone, I presume, in the course.
Absolutely, it's a huge part of your diving course. You'd also just a tradition of what we'll do as well is we'll run to the cross as a as a diving course yourself with your dive supervisors, and you'd normally get a chat from your diving officer up there, and it kind of, you really kind of starts to welcome you into the diving unit rather than
you start to feel it a bit.
You've kind of
crossed the sort of threshold. Like.
Absolutely, you know, you've a big part of the course done.
And when you say run to the cross,
So on your PT gear and your so at the top of Bear Island, there's a cross. It's the highest point of Bear Island.
Yeah.
So basically, you run up the hills there, and you take to the road, and your diving officer will be rightly pushing you up there. You know.
A bit of team building.
Absolutely.
So you've crossed that major milestone in Bear Island, and you're kind of, you say, 1 foot into the diving section at that stage, really. Like, you know, you're not as much of an outsider anymore. You move on then to the next phase, which is your introduction to surface supply diving.
Yeah, absolutely. So you get a taste of different diving. So it's surface supply diving. So your air is supplied from the surface. You're diving with your, for all the world, it's a hard hat underwater.
Kind of men of honor style.
Absolutely, men of honor style diving is what it is. And what is, it's just an introduction to the equipment. It's a further on 6 week course once you become a diver. But you always get a taste of using different tools underwater, cutting, grinding, even power washing underwater. So it's just a sense of working underwater rather than just doing a dive, you know.
Okay, yeah. And as you say, that's an intro only to that type of diving.
Absolutely. It's further training. There's a further 6 week course on your surface supply as well.
Okay, and then what comes after? You're nearing the end of the course at that stage? Or?
Absolutely, yeah. After that course, then it's just more or less a tidy-up week, so you're finishing up with all your equipment. You're starting to get issued your actual own personal equipment, and what you do then is you have a diver's logbook as well, so you need to fill up all your diver's logbook and also make sure your number ones are ready for your... for getting your badge and your logbook from the flag officer.
Yeah, because you were saying you're brought in, and is that kind of a formal ceremony, or it's a big occasion, I presume, for you?
Absolutely. What we do is it's kind of kept in house below in the diving unit. It's a very personal thing to the divers. Your diving officer will present you with your diving flash that we wear in our uniform day to day, and also our number ones. But you'll go up and you'll be presented in front of the flag officer inside in his office, and he'll present you with your diving logbook.
Wow. Yeah, and that was a big day, was it?
Absolutely huge. You know, after the couple of weeks you've put down, and it's a real sense of relief, and obviously a very proud day too, you know.
But as we discussed, that qualifies you to be a ship's diver. So you're at the very basic level of diving of naval surface diving at that stage.
Absolutely. Look, it's a big course done, but to be honest, in terms of your diving career, it's only the start, you know. A lot of people think that the hardest part of diving course at the diving is the diving course, but to be honest, there's a lot that comes after in terms of diving operations and different courses that you have to do, you know.
Yeah. And so once you finish the course and you have your patch and you're into the diving section, like, there's a lot of post course courses that you do. So, like, we mentioned the surface supply diving.
Like,
can you go into that a bit more, or what kind of? It's further depth, basically, is it?
Absolutely, but after you were presented your patches, you've actually a further 5 week course. Now we do a combined course, so you've your mixed gas phase.
Yeah.
So your interspiro-aerous mix, you'll do 5 weeks of that. That's basically interspiro. It's a semi-closed rebreather, or what it is. It's basically for deeper depths, obviously, and also it's to do with mine clearance as well.
Okay, right. And so what can bring you down to what kind of a depth?
Well, at the moment, to dive, we have a capability of 60 meters at the moment with it, but it's actually capable of a lot deeper. So we're going to keep building up and using different gases, being able to get down to eventually maybe 100 meters.
Okay, wow. And with that as well comes the risk of, like, decompression and all these kind of things. Like, can you go into that a bit, or that kind of risk?
Absolutely. Like, our dive supervisor would obviously have a more in-depth knowledge of all our regulations and our times at certain depths, you know. So we'd be briefed before we go in the water of your different times. But a great advantage of the rebreathers are you're actually getting an awful lot longer time and a lot less time then to off gas at the end, you know. Yeah. So you've less decompression, more time of diving. That's the greater advantage of it, you know.
Yeah, and of course, when we were walking around down at the dive section earlier, getting a bit of a tour around, we saw that there's actually a chamber down there for just in the event of, say, of needing it, like.
Oh, absolutely. We have our own recompression chamber, so we can actually treat all our diving incidents below. Luckily, we had none, really.
Yeah.
But we dive well in our regulations, you know. But each dive we do, anything over 36 meters, you actually have to have a dive chamber on site. So any outside operations we do, majority of the time our dive chamber will be on site, either on one of our own ships or an outside agency ship.
Okay, yeah. And you mentioned mine clearance as well for that kind of operation with the interest spiral mixed gas. Like how does that work? Or would they be kind of legacy mines, I presume, like left over from?
Yeah, look, a lot of them are old washed up mines from World War II. Like,
yeah.
But it's there is a lot more than what people actually think around the place, you know.
Yeah, that makes a certain amount of sense to say. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then, so besides that first 5-week course post-training, there's an awful lot of other things you can do as well, and that you do.
Oh, absolutely. There's huge add-ons. So as I mentioned earlier, your surface fly diving, which is a further 6-week course. You do a lot of outside courses as well. So you might do a diver medic technician course in Aberdeen. That's a 2-week course to be able to treat lads in the chamber and different types of diving related injuries, you know.
Yeah, and would that involve kind of recovering somebody who's gotten into difficulty beneath the surface, or
basically what it is, it's to do with decompression illnesses.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of the time, you know, you mightn't you know, so I might have to be in the chamber, I'm also a chamber attendant with someone, so treatment's inside, you'll have the doctor outside, and you'll be able to give certain amounts of treatment, you know.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, that must be a really kind of specialised sort of a thing, especially with the whole decompression thing going on as well.
Absolutely, you're dealing with serious depths at times, you know, so it's a lot of times there's huge risks involved, you know, so you need to be trained and ready to go at any time, you know.
Of course. And then you also do dive maintenance courses, as you said, on like to do with your equipment that you use.
All our equipment would be serviced and maintained in-house majority of the time. So the likes of our Corby Morgans would be all maintained and serviced
which
in-house.
Which would be the actual dive helmet
itself. The dive helmet itself, yeah. Down to our own demand valves itself. They're serviced yearly as well. And all our equipment we try to service in-house as well.
And then obviously when we're walking around the naval service diving section, it's self-sufficient, so you need to be able to actually drive your equipment around and low load containers and things, so there's driving courses to be done as well.
Absolutely, you need to get all your driving courses done as well, so we could be gone at the drop of a hat. So we need our truck drivers, jeep and trailer drivers, van drivers, just to be able to get the jobs themselves, you know.
Yeah, of course, and things that might be time sensitive or yeah.
Oh, absolutely, you could be gone at 2 o'clock in the morning, any time you could be gone.
And like, how does this fit into your career progression in the naval service? Because as we all know, like within the naval service, you need to go to sea and you need to do the conventional job aboard a ship as well, and you have to complete your other career courses too.
Absolutely. Look, to be honest, your diving course is actually only an add-on, more or less. If you want to get promoted or your promotion board, you need to get all your seamanship course or your relevant branch courses done. So you have an awful lot to think about, really, in terms of getting your sea time done, getting your relevant courses done for career progression as well. So to be honest, there's an awful lot of courses to be done, you know.
Yeah, while balancing your duties as
absolutely
a diver.
Absolutely, while balancing your duties as a diver, trying to progress as a diver as well, you know, there's an awful lot to be doing.
Oh. And so, at this stage now, so you're qualified now as a diver, you did the course 7 years ago, such as it.
7 years ago, yeah.
7 years ago. So you must have been on an awful lot of operations, seen an awful lot of kind of things. Can you go into some of the kind of things you would have seen over the course of your time?
Oh, absolutely. Look, I've came across an awful lot, to be honest, from a young age. Like, I've done various jobs, high profile jobs, such as Rescue 116, the Coast Guard helicopter that went down in Mayo. I've been involved in that. Down to only a couple of months ago, there was a trawler went down in Wexford. I was involved in that job. And then in terms of your normal day-to-day jobs, when I say normal, it's like a car in the river in Cork City or a missing person anywhere around the country. You're deployed and you'd be gone for a week or two at a time.
Yeah.
And just searching for missing persons. Or you'd be working with customs, high-profile jobs with customs, searching the hulls of different merchant vessels that come into port that are suspicious.
And what would you be looking for on the hulls? And how would that kind of thing, how would that...
To be honest, it's anything suspicious. So any attachments, anything that was kind of, that looks to be grinded away or anything at all, anything out of the ordinary, we'd record everything and we work closely with customs and with the Garda, and basically they'll direct us in what they want. Or they normally have a bit of intel and they work with our own operations branch down here as well.
But so like someone could have, say, like welded on like an attachment to the side of a hull containing some kind of illicit material.
Absolutely, yeah.
And have you ever kind of found anything like that in your experience, or?
on Éilí Níomh in 2015, I was involved in an operation, but
obviously it wasn't on Éilí Níomh.
No, absolutely not. But not yet. I haven't got any in diving yet, but we've plenty more years.
And like, so obviously there is the difficult aspect of it as well. Like, obviously the military diving is the main role of the diving section. The kind of body recovery part of it must be quite difficult. Like, how do you deal with that?
To be honest, there's no point saying it's not difficult when it absolutely is. You'd get the same fright each time, to be honest with you, no matter how many you do. But we've a great band of lads below in the diving unit, and afterwards everyone chats to each other, and there's always, maybe as strange as it sounds, it's nearly a laugh and a joke, you know, trying to take you away from what you're actually doing.
Yeah, because you've a job to do, and you can't get, I suppose, bogged down.
Absolutely. You know, you can go from one job to the next, and it's just, you need everyone's mental state still to be on the ball, you know?
Yeah, of course, and kind of remaining positive and that kind of... Absolutely. It must be difficult, though, but yeah. So, quite apart from what we talked about with regard to body recovery and that kind of thing, we mentioned earlier the importance of searches and the security aspect and the military aspect of the military divers. I'd heard it, for example, when Queen Elizabeth visited in, I think that was 2012, there was every bridge that she was to go over, say if she was travelling in Dublin, was searched by the naval diving section. Have you been involved in any kind of security searches like that underwater?
Absolutely. I've been involved in plenty, to be honest with you, and a lot of them are obviously very restricted to at the time, you know. We've searched any of her paths that she was travelling, any river nearby, we've searched inside out. We've used the likes of our different sonars. We've done key wall searches with divers for any suspicious thing underwater, such as IEDs or any different objects under the water.
And I suppose because like an IED can be as devastating from an underwater perspective, and with regard to explosive ordnance disposal or detection of that kind of stuff in the defence forces, it's the underwater capability that the divers can bring to that. Like,
absolutely, yeah. Like, we've got mine clearance divers below that actually can dispose of the mines themselves as well. And even when President Trump was over, and also when Vice President Pence was over as well, we've dived up around Doonbeg as well and searched all the rivers up there as well.
Yeah, it's just something that I suppose people wouldn't really think of, would be, you know, because when a high profile visitor arrives, we, like, from my perspective, being in the army, I know that like the engineers do special search and clear, and like there's a involvement from the Ordnance Corps and all that kind of stuff with regard to actually disposing of things that are found or potentially found. But the underwater thing is something that I suppose people wouldn't think of.
Absolutely not, and it's kind of a side of our job that obviously it's very restricted, so an awful lot of people wouldn't know what we're doing, you know.
Yeah.
So it's done before people even ever hear about it, you know. Yeah. So it's kind of a cool aspect to the job as well, you know, of the military side diving, you know.
Yeah, of course. Fantastic. And I suppose, Ryan, to take that further as well, like, you would have served in the Mediterranean from a search and rescue perspective, which can you talk to us a bit about that, like, as in what do you mean, what does that mean, like?
Oh yeah, look, back in 2017 I served on Éilí Eitne down the Mediterranean. It's an absolute eye opener, I'll be honest with you. I was out in the boats for the search and rescue, and I was first on the scene for dealing with migrants and stuff. It can be very difficult. A lot of it was to be honest, from a diving point of view, not to sound as dull, but I was dealing with recoveries more than actual casualties.
Yeah.
So I was dealing with screaming kids at you, screaming parents, trying to be rescued, you know. So there's a lot of decisions there you have to make there and then to recover everyone safely.
Yeah.
You know, so it's...
So it's kind of, it's a very high-pressure situation.
Absolutely. Task.
As you said, like, it didn't require a diving qualification to do it, but divers were given preference for that particular role, first out in the rib to a migrant vessel, and were given preference in that.
Absolutely. Look, in terms of recovery, swimming, finning and all that, look, it's probably best suited, and even from a mental state as well, so you could be dealing with casualties as well. So you could come across anything. I've come across guys that have been shot previously, you come across dead kids, you could like, literally could be inside in those boats, it could be anything handed out to you, to be honest with you.
So it needs someone who has, as we said, has that kind of mental state, that mental fortitude, and has seen things like that to manage the situation and get everybody back as safely as possible.
It absolutely helps, yeah. There's some days there you could be going for 12 hours straight rescuing guys. I remember at one point we had 712 migrants on board Etna within a 12-hour period to bring them all back into land.
Well, and as I said, like the training that you received in down in the diving section and on your diving course stood to you in dealing with that.
Oh, absolutely. It helped. It was definitely beneficial to me anyway, to be honest with you.
So you'd recommend anybody who's looking to join the Naval Service come down and have a go?
100%. I think it's definitely something that will tickle everyone's fancy, to be honest. Yeah. It's something, you know, a lot of us wear the badges. Every one of us wear the badges with pride, you know. It's a great sense of job satisfaction down below. I think any young lad or woman coming through, it's definitely should be in their career path to try out the diving course.
Fantastic. Well, after that, thanks a million for coming on the show, Ryan. It's very much appreciated.
No, thanks very much for having me.
I think there's an awful lot of eye-opening information there for people outside to learn a bit about the diving section, and for any potential people that might look to join the Naval Service and become a diver in the future, I think there's loads in that.
Absolutely. Look, I'd highly recommend it for anyone to come way down.
Fantastic. As always, for further information on the Irish Defence Forces, check out our social media platforms and military.ie. Serving members are encouraged to check out the members area of military.ie also. Today's podcast was produced by Corporal Carol McEnany and Sergeant Paul Keeley of the Defence Forces Audiovisual School. And the Irish Defence Forces podcast will be back soon with another episode. And as always, stay safe.